ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good evening and welcome to PM. I'm Samantha Donovan, coming to you from the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation in Melbourne. Tonight, no relief for Australians paying off a mortgage as the Reserve Bank keeps interest rates on hold. Also, more concerns about failed calls to 000, with news of another death revealed at a Senate inquiry. And two Aussie skiers win gold in Finland as they get ready for next year's Winter Olympics.
We are definitely still a smaller nation when it comes to the world stage, but we definitely punch above our weight, and it is great to see two Aussies on the top step of the podium.
First this evening, as was widely tipped, the Reserve Bank has today decided to leave interest rates on hold at 3.6%. The decision comes after the most recent figures from the Bureau of Statistics showed inflation had increased in October. And it'll no doubt be disappointing for mortgage borrowers trying to budget ahead of Christmas. For more on the bank's reasoning, I spoke to the ABC's business editor, Michael Yander. Michael, the Reserve Bank Governor Michelle Bullock confirmed at her media conference today that a rate cut wasn't even considered by the board. So why did the bank decide rates needed to stay on hold?
In the bank's statement, it said that there are some inflationary pressures that may remain in the economy, although they're not sure because we've just had a new monthly inflation figure, which of course came in at 3.8% for the year to October. But there are a lot of temporary factors expected to roll off that. Despite that, the board noted that it will take some time to see the full effect of previous interest rate cuts. So it remains very cautious about moving interest rates again while it's still seeing what's happening in the economy, and says there are heightened levels of uncertainty about the outlook in both directions. But Sam, RBA Governor Michelle Bullock was unusually clear in her press conference about the prospect for any more rate cuts.
I would say at this moment that given what's happening with underlying momentum in the economy, that it does look like additional cuts are not needed. The private economy is recovering. It's taking over from public demand. So that's happening as expected. We also know that we're coming from a position where if the economy's not in balance, it might even be a little bit tight. So they're the circumstances in which I think we're, and I have always said that we didn't go as high as other countries, so we possibly had not as far to come back as other countries.
And Sam, if that left any doubt, the Governor's answer to one of the next questions left none.
I don't think there are interest rate cuts in the horizon for the foreseeable future. The question is it just an extended hold from here, or is it possibility of a rate rise? I couldn't put a probability on those, but I think they're the two things that the board will be looking closely at coming into the new year.
So, Michael, what are the signs? Will there be any rate cuts in 2026?
At the moment, as Michelle Bullock said, you'd have to say the chances are very low. In fact, all the market pricing is now for an interest rate hike, a 30% chance of a rate hike as soon as February, which is the RBA's first meeting for 2026, and after they get the next quarterly inflation figures in late January. There's at least one rate hike fully priced in by the market as early as June, and a high likelihood of two rate rises by December. A month ago, there was a good chance of one more cut, so the market pricing has moved decisively away from any further rate cuts and towards rate hikes in 2026.
Well, that's a gloomy forecast for many Australians. And Michael, the government announced yesterday it's ending the power bill subsidy, that $350 annual rebate that's been in place since 2023. Did Michelle Bullock say anything about whether that could send electricity prices up again and increase inflation and therefore making those rate cuts even less likely in 2026?
Well, the Reserve Bank's been looking through those subsidies all along. So when they were holding holding prices down, the RBA kind of discounted that effect. And likewise, now that they're pushing electricity prices up, the RBA will continue to look through that. But she said for consumers, it will be a real bill shock because it's the real price that consumers are going to feel in their electricity prices.
And Michael, I understand there are also some overseas factors that the Reserve Bank Board is looking at.
That's right. As soon as this week, on Thursday morning, we'll find out whether the US Federal Reserve cuts interest rates. Markets are pricing in almost a certainty that it will. If it doesn't, that will be a major shock to financial markets and could lead to a big share market sell-off into the end of the year. But that looks pretty unlikely. And next week, the Bank of Japan is meeting with a 90% chance of a rate hike, and money is flowing back to Japan as the 10-year interest rate on Japanese government bonds approaches 2%. So that will be something central banks around the world are watching very closely.
Michael Yander is the ABC's business editor. At a Senate inquiry into the recent failures of the 000 emergency network, telecommunications companies have been accused of a cover-up after it was revealed one of them failed to report a death that is possibly linked to a recent outage. The accusation was made by Greens Senator Sarah Hanson-Young. It came after TPG confirmed a customer couldn't connect to 000 during a medical emergency because their Samsung mobile phone wasn't compatible with the 4G network. This latest revelation follows the death of a TPG customer in Sydney in November and adds to a growing list of people affected by the recent outages. Kathleen O'Connor reports.
Greens Senator Sarah Hanson-Young has accused major telecommunications companies of concealing the truth about the 000 failures.
I am absolutely flabbergasted that despite all of the huge public concern we have about this issue, this is a very serious Senate inquiry that's been underway. There is another inquiry being run into 000 and Optus, and not at one point did anyone within the industry want to fess up and say there'd been another death 6 days later. And it's a cover-up. You're all looking after yourselves.
Telecommunications company TPG had already admitted that one of its customers died in November after a call to 000 failed to connect. But today, the company's chief executive, Inaki Beretar, told the Senate inquiry into the outage a second death in the New South Wales Blue Mountains in September is possibly linked.
The customer was calling 000 on that device, did not work. The device was not compatible with 4G calling emergency services, and then 5 minutes later, that device was able to reach the emergency services through an alternative mean.
That alternative means is believed to refer to a national relay service, which is a 1-800 number. TPG says the problem relates to outdated software, which blocks some Samsung phones from making 000 calls.
And was the 5 minute delay in that person calling a critical factor in the death of that person?
I don't have that information.
The company says it sent a number of notifications to customers who own those phones, telling them about the problem and advising them to upgrade their software. Inaki Beretar says his company was only informed by Telstra yesterday about the Blue Mountains incident.
Telstra staff mentioned to one of our staff that there might be a person that passed away related to this incident.
Samsung Australia's head of mobile division, Eric Chow, told the hearing the company had been working with each of the telcos to fix the problems linked to its mobile phones.
This is not solely a Samsung issue, with other manufacturers having similarly impacted older handset following the 3G shutdown. Since 25th of September, Samsung has been working with each of the network as a matter of urgency, assisting with the identification process for affected handsets that had previously not been identified during the time of 3G shutdown.
David Tuffley is a lecturer at Griffith University's School of Information and Communication Technology. He says when the 3G network was switched off back in October 2024, it caused a lot of problems with older phones that were still connecting with the 3G network.
Older phones that worked on 3G and newer phones, there was a certain bit of software that was lacking on that phone. It's called Voice over LTE. And if that's not there, then a person trying to make a 000 call on that phone, it will fall silent. It won't get through, at least not initially.
David Tuffley says even with backup systems in place in case of emergency, it's not surprising some calls to 000 slipped through the cracks.
It should have been made very clear with public announcements and so on that this could happen. So, you know, if you have an older phone, you may not be able to make 000 calls and, you know, give information about how they can check whether or not their phone falls into that category.
Dr. Tuffley says the telcos need to take urgent action to prevent more problems.
There are hundreds of thousands of phones in Australia that have this particular problem.
Communications Minister Annika Wells was asked to appear but didn't attend. A spokesperson says the minister is accountable to the House of Representatives. She's answered questions in the House and will continue to do so.
Kathleen O'Connor reporting. This is PM. I'm Samantha Donovan. Just a reminder, you can hear all our programs live or later on the ABC Listen app. Australian police say they've taken down a sophisticated international money laundering syndicate linked to the illegal tobacco trade. Its alleged masterminds are accused of illegally processing more than $150 million. The joint federal and New South Wales police operation has charged four people and seized 10 tonnes of tobacco after executing a number of search warrants in Sydney. Rachel Hayter filed this report.
Put your hands up! Come outside!
Heavily armed police, parked by a garden of purple and white agapanthus, shout orders at a suburban house in Dundas Valley in northwest Sydney.
Put your hands up! Stand here in your driveway!
Hesitating as they exit the big front door, three people cautiously descend the steps.
Come toward us! Come toward us! This is the police!
This joint operation by the Australian Federal Police and New South Wales Police involved the execution of 14 search warrants on homes and sheds across Sydney. Officers say they seized 10 tonnes of illegal tobacco, a money-counting machine, and more than $200,000 cash. Detective Superintendent Peter Foe from the Organised Crime Squad of the New South Wales Police Force says four people have been arrested and charged for their alleged involvement in laundering money linked with illicit tobacco.
Those males were charged with numerous offences, including possessing a commercial quantity of illicit tobacco, which is actually new offences introduced by the New South Wales government only recently. Dealing with proceeds of crime and participating in a criminal group.
The charge of selling illicit tobacco carries a maximum penalty of 7 years jail. The illicit tobacco trade has become one of Australia's fastest growing criminal markets. It cost $4 billion in the 2023-24 financial year through lost tax revenue, healthcare costs and reduced productivity. And police believe this bust has helped to limit that trade.
We allege the money laundering syndicate paid individuals to open bank accounts and register fake businesses.
Detective Superintendent Peter Fogarty from the Australian Federal Police says those people don't actually control the businesses they registered.
These accounts would be taken over by a syndicate member and used to receive large amounts of money from the importation and distribution of illegal tobacco and other criminal activity.
The people who open the accounts are known as straw directors.
The reason why you might want to have a straw director or a nominee director is if you're a criminal.
Anton Moisenko is a senior lecturer in law at the Australian National University who specialises in financial crime and money laundering.
You don't want the bank to know that you control a particular company because they might figure out that you're up to no good and report your activities or not open a bank account for you.
Mr. Moisenko argues this bust has interrupted what appears to be a fairly standard money laundering scheme.
Which is not to downplay the importance of this behaviour and how unacceptable and damaging it is, but ultimately we're talking about someone who was notionally controlling a company. That's the allegation, while in fact acting on behalf of organized crime figures behind that company And they were engaged in what is often described as layering.
Layering is a stage in the money laundering process where dodgy funds are disguised through a series of transactions.
You will place them in the financial system, for example, open a bank account that's often described as placement, and then you might wish to engage in a number of transactions, move this money around the world through different companies, all with the purpose of making it far more difficult for the investigators to unspool all those transactions and trace where the money comes from. And then the idea is that once the money is sufficiently removed from its criminal source, it's safe to use again, and it appears to be just proceeds of normal, lawful commercial activity.
Police say they're not ruling out further arrests.
Rachel Hayter reporting. Tasmania's financial situation has been under scrutiny recently, with Hobart's new $1 billion AFL stadium being given the go-ahead by Parliament last week. Economists say the state's finances are in a dire position. And now the state's Auditor-General has issued a scathing report detailing overspending by government departments that's led to a multi-billion dollar budget blowout in just 3 years. The report also sets out allegations of fraudulent activity in the health department. Alexandra Humphreys has more.
Tasmania's financial situation has many observers worried. Debt is ballooning, credit ratings have been downgraded, and Treasury's warning the state government it needs to find new sources of revenue. Now, a new report from Tasmania's Auditor General reveals state government departments have overspent by $2.4 billion over 3 years. Saul Eslake is an independent economist.
Well, it is a significant overspend given that the Tasmanian government's operating expenses are typically of the order of $8.5 to $9.75 billion a year. So an average or a total of $2 billion over that 3 year period is not to be sniffed at all.
Tasmania's Treasury Department has long warned the government it needs to tighten its belt. Its debt is expected to climb to more than $10 billion by the end of the decade. And Saul Eslake is worried.
The government clearly has a problem, not merely with spending too much relative to what it's willing to raise in revenue, but also in keeping spending to the levels it forecasts in successive budgets.
So does this mean that Tasmanians can't believe the numbers that are put forward in the state budget, that we won't stick to them?
Well, the most recent interim state budget does assume very little, if any, growth in spending at all once you allow for the impact of inflation. That is, it assumes declines in spending in real terms for three consecutive years, something which hasn't happened in living memory in Tasmania or indeed in many other places.
Most of the overspend was by the health department, running over its budget by $1.4 billion over the past 3 years.
I think it's inevitable that the government will end up spending more on health in 2025-26 than was indicated in the budget, just as it has done in almost every year in the past 10.
Cecily Russell is a state Greens MP.
We see many examples of the government not being able to manage money properly, particularly within health. So, you know, there's issues around the way they budget, but there are also issues around the way they manage money, and that's what we see in this Auditor General's report.
The report found alleged frauds inside the health department have also cost millions. Those revelations were kept in the report despite the department's request they remain hidden. The Auditor General lashed the health department's inadequate fraud controls and failure to properly investigate. The department says no findings have been made by regulators, and it disputes there was financial loss. Cecily Russell again.
Rather than address the issues and fix the problems, they're looking for ways to cover it up. That's deeply concerning and a problem for the people of Tasmania.
You mentioned they're looking for ways to cover it up. Is that a reference to the health department's request that these details of these alleged frauds not be included in the report?
That's correct. So the Health Department identified these potential fraud incidents in October 2024. By October 2025, when the Auditor General wrote the report, they hadn't even reported them to the proper authorities for regulation and assessment. And then when the Auditor General said that they were going to include it in this report, the department asked for that not to happen. So this is a government that doesn't have proper processes in place for managing public money. They don't have proper processes in place for dealing with issues and potential fraud. And it's resulting in potential misuse of public money, which isn't okay in a system that's under great financial strain already.
Despite the massive budget blowout, Tasmanian Treasurer Erica Betts has welcomed the report, saying it's vital the budget is sustainable. He concedes that the health budget is, quote, challenging and has grown significantly.
Alexandra Humphreys reporting from Hobart. Australia's hopes for success at next year's Winter Olympics have been boosted by two gold medal wins at a World Cup event in Finland. Matt Graham and reigning Olympic champion Jakara Anthony have taken out the men's and women's mogul skiing championships. That's that discipline that sees competitors ski down a steep slope over several mounds and two jumps. Kimberly Price filed this report.
Incredible scenes out here in Ruka, Finland.
It was a stellar performance from reigning Olympic champion Jakara Anthony, who returned from a broken collarbone.
Nice cork seven with a mute grab off the top air there. Really clean turns here from Jack. She's such a technician when it comes to the turns. And nice big backflip mute grab off the bottom air there.
This victory brings Jakara Anthony her 24th World Cup gold medal. It's the third time in history that Australia has claimed gold medals in both men's and women's events on the same day. And veteran skier Matt Graham has been involved in all three.
Nice big cork 10 off the bottom air there. Stomps the landing. Matt Graham can take a bow. What a run.
The 31-year-old was surprised by the dual win.
Yeah, I'm just happy to walk away, you know, with another double goal with Jakara Anthony. Like, it's massive for Australia. You know, we're not a skiing nation, we're a beach nation, so how the hell does this happen?
While Australia isn't known for its snow, coaching director at Team Buller, Tim Gale, believes winter sports are gaining popularity.
We have a lot of people involved in winter sport. We are definitely still a smaller nation when it comes to the world stage, but we definitely punch above our weight. And Matt and Jakara have managed to win together before, but it is great to see two Aussies on the top step of the podium so early in the season, and also in an Olympic year.
He describes mogul skiing as a fast-paced, downhill competitive sport which sees athletes cover around 250 metres of slope.
Mogul skiing's action-packed 20 to 30 seconds, two jumps, everything you've got to impress the judges, and you are going up against, when it's singles, to get the best score you possibly can. And then in dual moguls, which we'll also see in the Olympics for the first time, going up against your competitor side by side, and you've got to beat them.
Having worked with Jakara Anthony before, Tim Gale says skiers have to put their bodies through intense training.
So our Aussie athletes probably have a bit of a unique preparation with us being such a summer nation. They spend a lot of time up at our Brisbane Water jump facility there. So jumping into a pool, so perfecting their jumps on water. And so they spend hours and hours there in the gym as well, just working on their agility and speed, and core strength is massive for them to prepare. And then they spend a lot of time throughout the year training, whether it's in Australia at Perisher or then also overseas for stints as well. But they're really into competition season now.
Michael Kennedy is the CEO of Snow Australia. He believes the gold medal pair are at their career peaks.
Look, they've both had great preparation.
preparation. Matt's an incredible athlete. He's a veteran athlete. He's one of the older athletes on the tour, very experienced, but you don't really know how they're going to go from year to year. And he's just come out all guns blazing and really in great shape. And with Jacara, really, I mean, you know, she's an absolute star, but she had an injury last year almost to the day. She just looked absolutely back to her best. So great signs, just 59 days out from the Milan-Cortina Winter Games.
The last Winter Olympics in 2022 were Australia's most successful, with the country's athletes taking home 4 medals. Michael Kennedy is hopeful for another successful campaign.
There's only a handful of sports that have had multi-medal performances over the last 5 Olympics, and skiing and snowboarding is one of them. So we're really proud of that effort. Having these senior athletes and then looking through to the future, we've got some really great prospects coming through. So I think the future is really bright.
The Winter Olympic Games begin on February 10.
Kimberly Price. Thanks for joining me for PM. I'm Samantha Donovan. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow. Good night.
Hi, I'm Sydney Peed from the ABC News Daily podcast. In the first week of summer, dozens of houses have been destroyed in bushfires. Today, the ABC's Central Coast reporter Sarah Forster on the homes that were lost and the ones still standing after Saturday's fire, and an expert on building fire-safe houses in high-risk areas, on which homes are prepared for the fire season ahead. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.